All right, we are here. Welcome. We are Galexis. We wish to talk to you about competition. Healing competition. Now, you've heard us say this before, or you've heard it in years past. Perhaps you haven't thought about it all that recently. But you're a powerful reality creator, and you're creating your reality every second of every day. You do it through your resonance, through the vibrational force field that you hold, through the self-image of you that you hold, the story of you that you adhere to, that gives you a sense of identity, a sense of past, present, and future. Your motivation, aligned with the divine, keeping you on track, keeping you aligned to your own true nature, your own true desire and will. That resonance in every second can create a magnificent reality for you. Even if your reality is huge, you can also work with your reality as if it were a personified being. It is your friend. You engaged it in a contractual arrangement when you became physical, and you said, hey, you know, physical reality, I'm creating you with the help of my team, my crew, my higher self, my spirit helpers, my master teachers. And we're all working together to create this. And you, reality, as my friend, will bring to me, will show to me, will reflect to me who I am, what I wish to explore, what I wish to know, what I desire. And sometimes your reality can bring you difficulty that in the end will teach you, will help you grow, will help you learn more about who you are, will give you the impetus for tremendous healing and change. And then there are things that can come to you in your reality that are glorious things to celebrate, which can also be challenging to you to even receive, to allow to be true for you, especially if it happens to be in conflict with your personal identity and story and the storyline of your life. In the process of this, you are one. This reality, you, all your unseen helpers and friends, are working together as a unit, in union. This reality is a complete reflection of you, perfect for you and different for you than it is for any other person. Now, in the process of this, when you enter the workplace, or you might even say any kind of marketplace. A lot of times what they call the marketplace where singles go to find mates. Or a marketplace that is financial, business related. A marketplace where you must market yourself, promote yourself to bring in clients or to bring in business. Your interaction with your reality is critical. You want to be on good terms with it. You want to have a good sense of yourself, a good sense of your own boundaries. That's your ego. You don't want your ego to get out of hand or to be too small, because then your boundaries are either weak or too strong. But it is in the range or area of life, in you operating with an ego, that you come across the idea of competition. Competition is an assumption that someone else in your marketplace is vying for the same money, the same clients, the same resources, the same business as you. This whole concept of competition, of course, is based upon scarcity. The idea that there's not enough for both you and your competitors to have as much as you want. This has been promoted by the ideas of corporate greed, where the big guys take all and the little guys get squashed. A very unfortunate situation in your collective consciousness, because it makes you afraid that you can be the little guy, that you can be squashed. If you're not at the top of the pecking order, if you're not the top of some major corporation, and even then, you could fall. You might be really hit hard by competition. It could drive your business down. It would leave you destitute. If it's a relationship you feel you're competing for, there's not enough people out there, and not enough good people anyway. And here these other people are in the same playing field, competing with you to find the good person and snap that good person up before you get to it. Get to that good person. Competition, based on the idea of scarcity, breeds the emotions or the energetic states of jealousy and also of envy. Jealousy means that you think that somebody else has got something you think you should have instead. It's a displacement. It's like, they got what I should have had. I want what they have, but they've got it. Now I'm going to have to go out and really work hard to try and find other avenues, other ways to get what I want. They've taken the good stuff already. They've usurped me. They've pulled the rug out from under me. Jealousy is a simple identification with that other person, as that person should have been me. I should be there. And jealousy can also bring tremendous amount of anger, almost blame at that other person. You're in my way. You got it, not me. I resent that you got it, that somehow or another life worked better for you than it did for me. And so that's why many people who become successful become targets of the jealous foci of other people. People paying attention to them, being jealous of them, being angry at them, resenting them, wishing and hoping for an opportunity to sabotage them, to tear them down, to criticize them, to judge them and bring them down to size. If you've ever done that to a person who's successful, bringing them down, judging them, well, they're so shallow, or they're so manipulative, or they're this and they're that. What you're doing is you're trying to diminish them so that you feel more in comparison. This is an either-or paradigm. Generally, in that situation, it's very difficult for the person who has jealousy to imagine themselves having that good fortune, that good luck. They can feel shame about it, a sense that maybe I'm not good enough, maybe I don't really deserve it. So that's why that many times they say, that person doesn't deserve. Those people don't deserve. They're not doing it right. When the one who channels us was in her 20s, she knew quite a few people who were poor and struggling, along with herself at the time. And one guy was talking about how he was going to have all these great foundations. He was going to establish these fabulous foundations to heal the planet, to love people, to protect the whales, etc., etc. Real noble things. But the guy had absolutely no money. He was always looking for some really super rich person to fund his schemes, his foundations. And he envisioned himself sitting on top of this foundation, giving this wonderful benefit to humanity and being this wonderful person everyone looked up to. His ego position was not apparent to him, and he wasn't certainly happy that if anyone would point that out. Well, but you don't have any money, and if somebody gave you money to start your foundation, it would be there, still their money. Instead, he took to judging rich people. The richer people were, the worse they were, because they spent their money badly. They spent their money foolishly. He was so resentful, so judgment-oriented, so jealous. So be careful with the energy of jealousy. It creates in you, as a response and reaction to your environment, to your reality, a tremendous trap, a prison, if you will, of yourself. You will always limit your prosperity, abundance, the amount of love, the amount you can receive, if you judge others who can receive apparently more than you. It's just good energy to instead look at a person who is successful and who is happy and enjoying and celebrating what it is that you've been desiring to have, and instead to raise your resonance in it by inspiration of that to a level where you too can participate, can experience that same joy and success. And the way you do it is saying, look, there's some inspiration. This person, I don't think he's all that more, you know, imperfect and advanced and powerful and so forth than I am. And look, they can do it. They can have it. This is inspiration for me. If they can have it, I can too. I want that for me too. I choose that. Hear me, guides? Hear me, friends? I want that too. It gives you a picture, a better picture, a real picture for you to imagine yourself enjoying that level of success. So utilizing it wisely, instead of being trapped and stuck in the difficult, painful prison of jealousy, you're instead free and expanding and opening to greater possibility for yourself. The other energy is envy. A lot of people use these terms interchangeably. But envy is different in the sense that envy is so anchored in scarcity that you see somebody who's successful, and this person or persons who are successful in the way you want to be appear so far from where you are that there's a huge gap. And you believe in scarcity so much that you are very troubled, frustrated, and perhaps even in despair that you could ever get there. They are so far above you. They're so far beyond where you think that you could be, that it is almost futile for you to go after that which you want. Because look, to get it, you have to be so way out there. You have to be so beyond. You have to be everybody's darling. You have to be this. You have to be that. I don't see how I can be that way. I guess I'm not going to be able to get that. I'll have to compromise. I'll have to get something that's not as good. Something more on my level of capacity. That's too much. I can't even see myself doing that. This is the approach, not necessarily of anger and judgment and resentment, but one of sense of insecurity, a sense of shame, and self-defeat. Your personal story, if you have envy, is one of series of defeats, a series of instances in which your reality does not support you. When the rug was pulled out from under you over and over again, where you cannot trust or even expect success, but only more struggle or hardship and effort. Envy is good material for fantasy. Yes, you can judge the persons that have it all that you think you want, and so on. But we would suggest that, again, as we have always said, if you judge somebody, if you judge a group, if you think, well, you know, I'd love to be there, I'd love to have the problems they have, they're not dealing well with their problems, but I would deal better with it. Boy, would I like to have those types of problems to deal with. What you want to do instead of feeling the gap and feeling the sadness of your anticipated life never matching up, of it being beyond the scope, beyond the pale for you. Instead, imagine in their beautiful moments, in their glorious celebration of success, what could they feel about themselves? What is their image of themselves? Now, if you're looking at some person who became an instant big celebrity, sometimes their self-image doesn't change enough to be able to accept that level of celebrity status, that level of success. And you see things like drug addiction and wild egotistical behavior and sabotage through affairs and all sorts of things. When this starts to happen to a well-known public figure, you know that their self-image didn't make it up there. So those aren't the ones for you to pattern after. Those aren't the ones for you to use as your imagination fodder for your visions and dreams. No. Those are people that you want to have compassion for because they got ahead of their self-perception. They got ahead of how they see themselves. And they're in a snapback. Have compassion for them. Don't judge them. Don't glory in their fall. Don't be resigned to, oh yeah, well, the scandal will pass or whatever it is. And they'll be back to their old tricks and they'll make their money again and I'll still be sitting here on the sidelines. Instead, use any opportunity of people who are way up there, much, much higher in the pecking order, way further up in the totem pole, as inspiration. You can use them to practice compassion for anyone, even bad guys that deserve to be punished, let's say, such as a Bernie Madoff or whatever. He ran off with so much of other people's money with that giant Ponzi scheme. You know how many people hate him. How many people are glorying in his downfall. Who only earlier, before that happened, were just in awe of this man's financial prowess. He was at the top He seemed to be untouchable, impeccable. He was at the top of the totem pole. While a person's at the top, utilize that for your imagination. What must it be like to live at that level? Totally taking for granted that you have all the money, the love, or whatever it is, the lifestyle that you do indeed want. The personal experiences you would just adore to have. What makes that person someone you could possibly envy? What would it feel like for that to be normal and natural for you? What would it be like to wake up in the morning in that kind of a life? Stretch. Imagine. What change would it make to your self-image, to how you perceive yourself? If you can use that as your imagination input, what would it feel like to live on that level and it's natural? Natural. Normal. Every day. You wake up. You're still in the mansion. You wake up every day. You still have powers and strengths. What would it be like for you? This will conflict, as we said, with your personal story. You may want to start doing some shifting and changing of your personal story, your storyline, your self-image, your identity. Because, dear ones, your identity is also something you will create from moment to moment, second to second. And you can change it if you wish, if you're ready, if you're willing. But you have to imagine yourself beyond it. Most people have difficulty with imagination, especially of something that they have yet to experience. Oh, it's easy to imagine something you've already experienced. Yes, I have had a string of failures. Oh, yeah, well, it's easy to imagine failure then, isn't it? You have so many experiences, so many times that you've experienced all these emotions and these states and these changes and these energies, these difficult energies. But what if you didn't have those difficult energies anymore? What would it be like? What can you imagine? As you explore that, you will discover that as you expand your self-image, as you expand yourself, your resonance, your vibratory field, as you love and have compassion for others, you'll find as your resonance raises, your reality starts shifting. As you let go of the ego that would like to see you being better than they, yeah, I'm smarter, or I'm better, or I would do better than they, I'm more spiritual, blah, 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 blah. You find that your reality will bring you better things. Better things. And it will go until you reach a point where your self-image is in conflict with what you're experiencing. That's why so many people have a wave of success and then in there is a snapback somewhere. Just as they're going, da-da-da-da-da, all of a sudden everything starts to unravel and fall back. Because the person hasn't expanded their self, their identity, their story. They haven't changed their story to be congruent and consistent with a new reality. In your workings of your reality, there are certain common denominators of creation. One, in your reality, there is no competition. Your reality is perfect for you, whatever it is you require. Some people are busy giving their power away, and so they will attract to themselves all sorts of circumstances in which they feel powerless. But, dear ones, even if you feel powerless in a circumstance, you always have choice to take your power back. And when you take your power back, your self-image expands. And you have greater capacity and resources within you to deal with the situation. If a challenging situation arises and you just shrink right back to a smaller self, oh yeah, I've had those problems ever since I was 18. Hey, you shrink right back to age 18. How can you deal with something at the age of 40? It's more, it's bigger than what an 18-year-old can handle, and you can collapse beautiful realities that way. Your reality was made so perfect for you. There is no such thing as competition. It's all mental yama yama inside your head. You have created competition because of fear. Fear of embarrassment. Fear of failure. Fear of exclusion. Fear of rejection. Because of your fear. And that fear comes from your story. Your storyline. Now, if you want help clearing an old storyline, we did an evening on that called Your New Story. And we would suggest that you can do that love and healing event to experience a change in your storyline. But any changes that you make to expand, you must sustain that expansion. As you sustain that expansion, you become more and more aware that there is no such thing as competition. Nobody's going after the same market as you. You are unique. What is it like a snowflake? There's no two identical. You came into this life with unique capacities, resources, talents, strengths. If you can get rid of all the self-judgment, if you can get rid of the old shame patterns and the old storyline of you always having problems or having effort or having to struggle against insurmountable odds, etc., etc., you'll find you too can make your way into a greater and more beautiful life. And you'll find that it's in the magic of your intention and your choice. The magic, when you hold your energy radiant, when you are giving love to yourself and to your reality and not judging yourself or your reality, not resisting the divine in you, not resisting success or failure in your reality, you are free. You're free to explore, to create according to your imagination and your choice. When you have that intention, you will see magically your reality will line right up specifically for you. You don't need to compete against anyone. It'll line up for you. Now, you're trained and taught this is not true. There are statisticians out there who are saying your market is so and so big, and only so much of this pie can be yours. Unless you go to that level, that enviable level of total mastery, being in the limelight, stepping into that greater reality framework, only then will you have a bigger piece of the pie, and that because you'll be taking it away from other people competing in the same area with you. And there are people who feel bad about taking away people from other people. There's all sorts of dynamics that can screw you up in a so-called competitive setting. But as you experience more magic, you realize there is no competition and you can create whatever you choose. You are actually, as a reality creator, you're creating your clients. You're creating your abundance. You're creating that relationship. You're creating it out of scratch. Who can prove to you that objectively those people were already out there? You can't really prove anything. Oh, yeah, everybody that you meet has their history, their story, their, they have their driver's license or whatever. But you can't prove that it wasn't just created, like, with a snap of the finger by you and your crew. You can't prove it. A lot of times people say, when will my great love come? I'm looking for my great love. And we'll say, well, create them. Create your great love. Let them just pop out of this illusion that this whole reality is into your life. Fully, fully loaded with, you know, history and interests and talents and whatever. Why not? And people say, well, there's a little cognitive dissonance there, a little jarring conflict of belief. Huh? What? A few years ago, there was a story that came out, or supposedly a research that said that for women over a certain age, there weren't enough men. That if you were over a certain age, almost just forget about finding a man to marry. It's just really, really hard. The fact is, it doesn't even apply. That is consensus, collective illusion. But for many years, we had people who were just morose over that. Oh my, it's so hard out there. And they built a whole belief system based on that one article or book or research, whatever it was. And that was just somebody's theory. They didn't look at, well, how good were these women feeling really bad about themselves, in shame and so on. How good were these women at creating a relationship for themselves? They were just looking at numbers and making assumptions. Numbers and statistics don't count. They don't make any difference. It is who you are that makes all the difference. So celebrate your reality. Grow, dance, celebrate, enjoy yourself. When you're free of judgment, you're so much freer and happier. When you can use every success as inspiration, your self-image grows and expands until you too begin to experience the same flow, the same magic, the same opportunity level. There is no limit for you but your imagination. All right, dear ones. We'd like now to turn our attention to you. We have a nice vortex set up for you, ready to go. And so, anyone who would like to ask a question, please raise their hand and Daniel will bring you a mic.
Hi there, everybody. Hi, Galexis.
Hello, dear one.
Galexis, I've been practicing trying to find out the reasons underneath all this fear that I've got. So I read a book by Osho, and Osho said, lay down with your fear every night for an hour and feel it, and feel what's underneath it and witness it. So I do that a lot, and I feel more fear, but I don't know what it goes to.
Oh, all right.
So I'm all scared, mm-hmm. but I don't know what it's doing.
All right. Well, a great deal of your fear is your fear of fear. What we would suggest that Osho was talking about, that if you could just utilize it, it might make a good difference. For you to be able to find what's under your fear, to sit with your fear, you have to sit in detachment from it, in a sense, as a researcher. Go and sit with it as a person who wishes to learn from the fear, rather than a person who, once engaging with the fear, falls for it and gets into it.
I get it.
All right? That detachment, it is not to separate yourself from feeling the fear, but essentially to say, okay, I'm going to understand fear. It might be helpful for you to visualize fear in a personification, perhaps. And then imagine yourselves having a conversation. Well, fear, what have you brought me today? And fear says, well, here's what I'm bringing to you today. Here's the fear that everything's going to be horrible. I'm going to die in a terrible death. I'm da, 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 this and that and this and that. I'm going to be broke, lonely, loveless, terrified, ill, everything. I'm just going to be everything. Here, I'll have for you. All right. Thank
you,
fear. And why are you bringing me all of this stuff? And then fear will speak and says, well, and one of the first things that fear says, although we would suggest there is more to it, we're going to give you a little bit of fear's message. This is something you think that if you know all your fears, then you can control your reality and protect yourself and defend yourself from your fears. That you can, there's things that you can do, that you can take steps, and that you can prepare for it, you can brace for it, you can do whatever you need to do to prepare for it. But of course, this is assuming that the fear is real, and fear is never really truly real. A second thing that your fear is telling you is that you need more love. And so you hear that, you say, okay, I need more love in the form of what? All right, well, more love in the sense of good friends and companions, in the sense of loving your body with good food and nurturing it, and loving you by taking all the judgments and all the guilts and all the stuff off of you. But for most people, fear is the antithesis of feeling safe and loved. So that might be one.
Okay.
All right. Another one is a question to you. What do you trust? What is familiar and safe to you that you rely on, that you trust?
Well,
to give you a sense of order and stability and peace.
I trust order, stability, and peace. And when I lay down to relax and to feel the fear, I get into a very relaxed state. And so I actually realize that I can make that happen.
That's right.
And that gives me a sense of less anxiety.
That's right. That's right. Now, stability, peace, order is your creation. So if your stability, peace, and order don't work really well or consistently, then you want to look at, well, how do I order things? How do I prioritize things? How do I stay on top of things? What things do I have to stay on top of? What things must I do to stay on top of things? And then you get an idea about it. Some of these are good, some of these are unhelpful, and some are not. The ones that are not helpful are the ones that are the old familiar thought and feeling tracks. Because fear actually is about bumping you out of your routine, bumping you out of the tried and the true and the little box that is comforting. And everyone has a box that's comforting, a little reality that they crawl into. It tends to be a bit on the small side for a huge light being, but it's there. And you want to see where that is and expand it and bring it out. Okay, so that's one thing too. And another message from fear is, you know, when are you going to imagine something different for your future? When you're going to create some reality here that's different? We're going to keep bringing you fear until you start thinking, well, what if I didn't have fear? Let me imagine, who would I be then? And you can free yourself of the identity of the fearful one.
Mm-hmm.
There's another message from your fear. There can be many messages. Another message is about your motivation and where you put your energy and how that works in your body. Because if your energy doesn't move appropriately through your body, then you can get really stuck. And for you, in particular, you need a certain amount of physical activity. Well, everybody does. And you need to know what that is. And you also need to know how to, and you do know, how to move energy through your body. And to be able to do that in an easy, elegant way without any effort or strain.
Thank you.
All right. So those are some of the messages. We sense there's two or three more that may also have to do with your past, having to do with your relationships with family members. But the stuff that's related to the past, which is projected, therefore, into the future, in a sense, and that is any past circumstances projected into the future, the fear may bring you these projections and these of the future, but if you'll look, that they're actually stuff that you've imagined or experienced in the past in some form, perhaps with your family or in other circumstances, that you're just throwing into the future. And so when you realize that you are the one who's taking your past and making your past the future and pulling stuff from, oh, way, way, way back when I was there and bringing it in and so on, and then, yeah, that kind of thing will happen in the future, then you know, oh, it's just part of the story. Let me go get rid of the storyline there. Let me imagine a new storyline. In this particular case, there's a parts of you that are beating yourself up, or parts of you that don't think very highly of yourself or highly of your capacity or your gifts or your talents and your strengths. And so as a result of perhaps what you may perceive as failings that you've made in the past may project a lot of scary stuff into the future as if that past were repeating itself. So this is a identity crisis, all right? So that's some of the messages. But we would suggest that once you work with those or once you just explore those, and all you have to do is really feel them and think about them, you don't have to do a lot of processing, you don't have to spend a lot of time on it, but you just feel with it. We'd say that really at the way that the energies are moving now on their planet, you don't need to sit with your fear for an hour. If you do 15 minutes, that's way enough. All right? Okay. When Osho said that, that was before a whole bunch of portals opened up and before a whole bunch of energy hit the planet, okay? Everything's accelerated now.
He talked about the fear of God, too. What is the fear of God?
The fear of God. Well, the fear of God actually is tied into the collective, where it is a tribal god concept that has been expanded to take over everything. And it's a part of the twisted and distorted masculine energy that went through so much distortions over about the past, 3,000 years. And that particular one is, there's first of all, there is that fear of that God will be displeased with you and will separate from you. All right, that's one. A second one is that because of the feelings of separation between one and what one perceives as God, there is a concern that, am I being foolish in actually believing in God? And so part of the old traditions, in order to make everybody obedient to the system, obedient to the culture, and loyal to the tribe, was to build in a fear of God's wrath if they didn't adhere to the behavioral rules of the tribe. All right? And so if you go deep inside yourself, you will find what those behavioral rules seem to be. And you'll find what boundaries you're supposed to have. You're supposed to have a modest ego because you're supposed to, you know, crawl on your knees before God and beg for mercy or beg first off and please, 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 can you give it to me? And so the relationship between humans and God is definitely, for the most part, devastating. And it's just in the past 30 years that people are starting to emerge here and there from these ancient traps and prisons of a fear with God, because God has been made into a big, ugly man with a long beard who's very jealous and pouty and egotistical up the max, and that he can do all sorts of nasty things to you on a whim. You see, so it's that's just a control system. Now, another way of using fear of God is fear actually of one's own yes and no, but it's, you live your life according to certain principles that you think are worthy or noble or useful or something like that. That's your philosophy. And the fear of God is anchored into your adhering to what you believe is the good philosophy for you. And if you don't do it, if you sabotage your own rules, you'll feel kind of guilty. You'll fear that you will twist your reality, that everything that you are building up, all your successes will fail. Yes. All right? And so that's a second version of fear of God. No, right. Right. There is still an idea that the divine is judgmental. And so you holding your own philosophy, saying, well, you know, I need to adhere to this to be a good person, and if I sneak around and don't adhere to it, I'm a bad person, and then the energies might fall apart. I'm going to have to do a better song and dance. I'm going to have to put on a better facade. I'm going to have to pretend that I'm much more successful or happy or whatever than I am, and try to fool other people. But generally, this duplicity will invariably cause the person who is being duplicitous to sabotage themselves in some way. All right. You're welcome. Thank you. Interesting questions. All right. Who's next?
Thank you, Galexis. I have a question. Learning a lot tonight. In addition to the fact that definitely I have jealousies with people and so forth throughout my life, my whole life I have felt other people jealous of me for either the way I look or people I know or gifts that I get or just talents that I have, whatever. And it's I really want to heal that. Can you speak about that?
Well, you know, in a sense, it wouldn't be a problem if people were jealous of you if you didn't feel the impact of that as feeling bad. If you feel uncomfortable with it, you know, they're jealous of me. You know that they're judging you. So you're feeling maybe too visible. You're feeling that any time they could take you down or they would tear you apart or something like that. Or that they're kind of hanging out with you in order to suck your energy, in order to kind of, you know, be in the glow, you might say. It can make you feel uncomfortable. That is because of your self-image, okay? Your self-image, first of all, is if you feel that somebody is jealous of you, you can feel a little paranoia. That's one stage of it. Another, and in that paranoia, you'll feel like, oh, they're going somehow or another. They could sabotage me. They could go around behind my back. They could tell bad things to other people. A second one, as we mentioned there, is about, you know, coming and sucking your energy. And, of course, nobody likes their energies just being sucked and sucked. People coming in, let me feed on you today. You know, you're just so, I want to be you. I want to be you. I should be you instead of you. But I'm just going to come and suck on your energy. And I'm going to pump myself up. And maybe I'll find a way to push you down a bit so that I look better and so on. And in that case, what you have to do is to know that these people are doing it from a place of feeling inadequate within themselves. And when they do that, if you have any place within yourself that feels inadequate, it will resonate with that. And then you'll be nervous. You'll be squirmy, uncomfortable, anxious. You won't know exactly how to respond to them. And then you end up feeling like you have to be ingratiating to them, or you have to be overly nice to them, just to get them off the judgment, to get them happier, and so on. And as soon as you do that, you're martyring to them. You're just kind of giving up a lot of your power to them, and you have to stop that. That comes from your own insecurity. We would say, Jace, that what you want to do with people who are jealous of you is to look at yourself from the other point of view, as we were talking about earlier, as the inspiration. Allow yourself to say, look, let me claim this level of success or looks or lifestyle or whatever it is. Let me claim it and celebrate it, that I deserve it. It's good for me. I enjoy it. It's natural for me. And I am just going to inspire people, because I'm going to just enjoy it up the wazoo. And I'm also going to have good boundaries. And in those good boundaries, if people are taking advantage of me, I will very gently say no. And I can say no because I value myself, and I can say no when I need to. And you have to feel comfortable with that. That means your self-image must be expanded. Your story must be expanded. Because somewhere inside there's an insecure you that says where you are and what's going on with you is a little bit of a fluke. And any time somebody could tear it apart, any time you could lose it. And then your looks wouldn't be worth anything anymore, or you wouldn't have the lifestyle anymore. You wouldn't have this, or you wouldn't have that. Does that make sense to you?
It does. I mean, it does. My life in the last year has been so crazy that it's been hard to believe that it's been my life. Things that have happened have mm-hmm. been so...
Well, that always happens when you go through a lot of personal shifting, because you're setting your feet on... If you notice, it's a sense that you're shifted from a certain track and you're shifting onto another track. Do you get that sense? That in your life there's a certain path you were on, and you're going through a shift now.
Yes.
You're shifting, turning direction, changing direction. You're going to another path. It may look similar to what it used to be. It may look better, but it may look different. It doesn't matter. What it is that new path is because you are being called by your own inner divine self to grow, to move forward, to seek something new and different, and to imagine something new and different. And so when that happens, you have a lot of fallout. You have weird experiences. You have magic that comes in and then crashes. You have opportunities that come in and then just suddenly dissolve. You have intense periods where you're just almost manically focused, and then other times where there's nothing going on and you're totally unmotivated. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, and I'm trying to, like, I had this really powerful summer, and then the last 6 months has been this hellish misery, and I'm just trying to get back to that summer.
No, you don't want to get back there. No, what you want to do is you need to move forward now.
Right.
Right. You need to, in a sense, let that go with love. Let that go with peace and forgiveness of yourself, in case you think you might have done anything bad or wrong or whatever, and forgiveness of anyone else involved. It's very important for you to let it go, because in the transition, there's a lot of stuff that's going to have to be let go. That's part of what we call the dark chaos. It is chaos when you go through that kind of transition. And many of you are in that place. Does this sound familiar to any others of you? Going through a crazy transition period that you don't know where it's going to lead. You don't know when it's going to end. You just wish that somehow or another you could have more peace and stability and sense of direction like you thought you used to have. But your direction has shifted. So you need to let go of stuff. When you let go of stuff, you're free then to imagine something greater. Now, if it's in the case of a person, what can happen too is that if you let go of a person with love and let go of it from loving yourself and valuing yourself by letting go of the stress that might have been associated with that loss or the separation or whatever it was, what you'll find is that you will heal in such a way and lift your resonance, and your resonance will expand really, really great. And as it does that, that person or persons or situations may actually return to your life, but it will be more respectful of you. The boundaries will be correct, because you lost some of your boundaries in the transition. Your ego got kind of bent and twisted a bit. And people go through that. It's one of the aspects of the chaos. And that's why we've spent so many of our love and healing events, and so much of what we've been talking about over the past, actually over past year and a half, 2 years now, is on this chaos, on this emergence. You're emerging into a new path. You're going to become a new self. And in so doing, you can't try to hold on to an old self or an old setup or an old perspective. And once you let it go, it's kind of zen-like, you know, that if you let it go, if it's really yours, it will be there. It will return. But so many people are afraid of loss and separation, loss of a dream and separation from a dream, and they don't think that they can function without it, or they don't think they have value without it, or they don't think they have any sense of purpose or direction without it. They can get very lost for quite a long time. We do not recommend that. Some people get lost for years feeling purposeless. So what we would suggest is to work with our material on emergence. Learn about the dark chaos. Learn about the void, which is the place where you have to come to peace with yourself and shift yourself and expand yourself to a new resonance and understand who you are. And then from there, the new actions into the light chaos will bring an acceleration of positive opportunity and all sorts of wonderful resolutions and openings. And you're kind of it's like you're backing into the light chaos and you won't be able to do it. You can get just so far, but you're still facing your past. You've got to turn around and face the future, which means you've got to envision, you've got to imagine, and you've got to understand to imagine what it would mean to be free. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you so much.
It's a very powerful, pivotal time. And the sooner that you begin your imaginational journey and let the old go, the sooner you'll find what pieces stay and remain and what pieces are not meant to be there for you. All right. Thank you, dear one.